Well, good afternoon and welcome to Free to be Faithful. I'm moderator Kip Allen. Free to be Faithful is a religious liberty, education, and awareness program that was created by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. This in response to increasing governmental incursions into our religious life. People of faith and our institutions have come under increasing attack in recent years from secular sources. Many issues pertaining to religious liberty are being decided in the nation's Supreme Court. Religious liberty lost a champion when Justice Antonin Scalia died. His replacement, though, Neil Gorsuch, a conservative appointed by President Trump, was narrowly appointed on a mostly party-line vote. And then when Justice Kennedy, a swing voter on the court, announced his retirement, the president nominated Justice Brett Kavanaugh as a social conservative to the post as well.
Free to be Faithful on Worldwide KFUO.
The Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on his nomination has taken partisanship now to new levels. I'm going to be discussing the situation with Washington Observer and Focus on the Family Vice President, Tim Giglein. Tim, welcome to the program. Sorry we had a couple of technical problems are getting you on.
Well, it's a great honor to be with you, and it's a great honor to be speaking about Brett Kavanaugh, who I believe will make a truly outstanding justice.
You know, when I get a program like this, or, you know, especially when I had first contacted you and suggested that this would make a good program for us, you know, I usually spend several days really studying the topic, trying to figure out what's going on, who's going on, you know, who the players are and what's happening. And Tim, I got to tell you, I have never seen anything like I am seeing now in the Judiciary Committee. Not to be too close on the words, it's bonkers. I've never seen anything like it, Tim. What's going on?
Well, it doesn't add up. Judge Kavanaugh is admired in his church, in his community, and in his profession. And throughout this very distinguished career in public service, he has undergone no less than six FBI background checks. And in all of those six checks, which are deep and wide and broad, there has never been even a whisper of misconduct. And 65 women who are his contemporaries, you know, during high school, they've all come out. I mean, 65 of them and said that Brett Kavanaugh was and is a man of total character and total integrity. And in addition to those 65 women, countless women who have known him personally and professionally, spanning you know, three decades, have all testified to his respect for women, his character, and his integrity.
Well, Tim, let's do a little bit of background on this. Justice Kavanaugh,
sure.
Judge Kavanaugh was nominated by President Trump to fill the seat that was held by Judge Kennedy, who recently retired. This thing got off to a rocky start from the very beginning, even though Judge Kavanaugh had sat, I believe, for 12 years in one of the most prestigious courts in the country, the Circuit Court of District of Columbia, Court of Appeals District of Columbia. He's written over 300 separate judgments, all of them, to my knowledge, have been lauded as being superbly written and very much in contact with the Constitution. Yet from the moment he went before the committee, he has faced one attack after another, come out of it smelling like a rose. And now, just as the committee is supposed to end, this letter comes up, this woman that Senator Feinstein had sat on for almost 2 months and refused to never even address the issue when she had Kavanaugh under oath, either publicly or in a private session, alleging an incident that Kavanaugh says never happened, that the witness she names says never happened. She can't mention she can't remember the year. She can't remember where it happened. She can't remember how she got there. She can't remember how she got back. She changed her story numerous times on how many people were there. Her own therapist has contradicted what she has said. And people now want to hold this whole thing up until this can be, quote, investigated by the FBI. And that's not even a federal crime. What's going on?
Yeah, it's very interesting. The great President John Adams said that facts are hard things. And I think that amid all of the circus-like atmosphere that you are discussing, and I was very honored to be in the hearing room for two of those of the 4 days. And you are absolutely right. It was a total circus. I mean, just in the days that I was there, there were the arrests of more than a dozen protesters, and they would stand up and shout and scream and et cetera, et cetera. So you know, the fact that Brett Kavanaugh was able to keep his cool, continue to answer broadly, widely, deeply the questions that were before him, in one sense, I think is a testament to his patience and his character. But the second thing that you touch on, I think, is perhaps one of the most timely and relevant things. Senator Feinstein apparently did not believe the allegations were serious or credible or relevant enough to share with the FBI or with any other member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, even in the confidential background portion of the committee process. Because if she had believed it, she didn't do it. And this is the part that genuinely does not add up. But what does add up is that, unfortunately, some members are doubling down on a strategy of what appears to a lot of us as character assassination. I mean, they're seeking to destroy the life of a very distinguished jurist and public servant for the sake of appeasing the far left-wing base. And I find that, and I think millions of Americans of both political parties find that very disconcerting.
Tim, what is at stake as far as religious liberty is concerned here? Now, Justice Kavanaugh seems to be a man of faith. And his record speaks as, I guess the phrase is, he's an originalist. He believes that the Constitution means what it says. What is this saying, this entire debate saying, about the future of religious liberty in the United States?
Well, I believe that Judge Kavanaugh actually has participated in cases on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which you referenced earlier. And, you know, we can only draw conclusions based on those particular cases. So although he has not clearly been a member of the Supreme Court, and I pray and anticipate that he will be, my own sense of it is, given his jurisprudence, given the concept of originalism, and given the manner in which he very thoughtfully works through cases, I think it is very possible that, and I'm speaking very broadly, but on the issues of religious liberty and conscience cases, I think there is probable reason to conclude that he might reason through any potential case in a way that is similar to Justice Alito or Justice Gorsuch. But, of course, until we actually know what the cases are, what the particularities are, where the case arises, you know, what the constitutional question is, you know, it's very difficult to say that a potential justice will rule, you know, in this regard or in that one. But based on the cases that he has already ruled upon, I think that there is a reason for optimism in that I think and anticipate that he could well be a justice who favors the constitutional view of religious liberty and rights of conscience. I take great heart in that.
Tim, the faith community has been saying for a long time that they are under attack, and the secular community has been flatly denying it. And yet, we've seen everything from old Baron L. Stutzman to Jack Phillips, who's best has once again been hauled before the Colorado Civil Rights Commission.
Right.
And what we have seen since the new administration has taken over and since Justice Gorsuch was placed on the court, there seems to be a little bit of a move now in the high court and perhaps even in the lower court areas to be a little bit more open to the concept of religious freedom, saying, yeah, you know, this does deserve to be protected as it has been. I'm wondering, is this the fear on the other side that the secular agenda will not succeed? You know, they can't get it through the legislature, so they've been trying through the courts recently and has had a fair amount of success. But now maybe the pendulum's swinging. Is this what they're afraid of?
Well, it's very interesting because you have been so kind, across the years to invite me to be a part of this radio program. And it's something I really enjoy. And I remember on one of the very first interviews that I did with you, I mentioned to you that I'm, a irredeemable optimist on the question of religious liberty cases that come to the Supreme Court. And so a few weeks ago, I went back and I looked at the most recent 10 cases of religious liberty and conscience rights that had come before the court. Now, what is particularly interesting in this regard is that these cases, came to the court not under a court on many domestic and social, areas where there was what, somebody of goodwill would say is a conservative majority. Very often, the last retired Justice Kennedy, was firmly a very important vote in the cases that I'm referencing. And with no exceptions, which is a big statement, it was a very categorically and has been a pro-religious liberty court on the cases upon which it's ruled. So I think we can take great heart from that, that any court that would potentially include Justice Kavanaugh would potentially continue, and I'm speaking very broadly, would potentially continue the court's recent trajectory of pro-religious liberty decisions. And those arose in large measure because of the eloquence and the defense of the late, great Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, and in a couple of very important instances, Chief Justice Roberts. So in that regard, I'm very hopeful. I think the thing to watch, however, is not just the trajectory of any future court on the issue of religious liberty and conscience. And I think this is very important to say, it hasn't been said enough, which is that for all the cases that the court has taken up and decided, there's reason to be pleased. But I think we have to remember that there are a number of cases that have come to the court that have not been accepted. And I think this is where my optimism comes in particularly strongly. We have a photography case of a Christian photographer in New Mexico. You referenced a florist, a Christian florist, who lives in Washington State. There is a T-shirt, a Christian T-shirt shop designer and owner who lives in Kentucky. These are very high-profile cases at the state level or at the district federal level. And I think what is possible, and of course we can't know yet, but I think that not only will the victories continue on religious liberty cases, but I think some of these other cases that have been brewing at a lower level, on a state level, et cetera, I think it is possible in future that more of these cases will potentially be accepted by the Supreme Court for its consideration. And if that's the case, I think we have a very great possibility of winning those cases and therefore expanding religious liberty and conscience rights even more broadly.
Well, Tim, something I'd observed in two of the more recent rulings, one was dealing with the pro-life pregnancy crisis centers in California and the case of Jack Phillips with Masterpiece Cake Shop. The
yes.
court ruled in their favor both times, but the court ruled on it on a basis of speech, not religion. And that, it looks like they just wanted to avoid that issue. or issue a very narrow ruling. You know, you can't force somebody to say something against their conscience. But again, that was, they based it on free speech explicitly in both rulings. So now we've still got the issue of the court categorically issuing something on freedom of religion, which they have not yet done. And this is something I'm looking at very closely.
Mm-hmm. May I tell you, that is the other area of genuine optimism in this case that I'm making, which is that there are, and I'm really not overstating it, Jack Phillips was indeed brought to the court as a free speech case, even through the prism of the idea of religious liberty. But here's why I'm optimistic in regard to the question that you ask. And for people listening, this is a extremely important distinction. Jack Phillips, of all the lower court potential cases that we could be discussing today, the Jack Phillips case was actually not the best test case for freedom of speech as it relates to religious liberty. I think there are actually far better cases, purer cases, that are religious liberty cases, but are far more in the space of free speech. And I use the example of this man who is a Christian, who owns a tea shop, print and design shop in Kentucky, and being asked, being demanded of, that he use his shop to print T-shirts with statements that are in opposition to his faith. Now, that is not precisely a Jack Phillips cake-style case. It's a much firmer, purer First Amendment speech case. And so what I'm saying is that with a different configuration of justices, I think it is we should be very optimistic that the court will be open to ruling in a broader and in a wider applicability of those cases. So the Kavanaugh hearings and the Kavanaugh votes and all this, it really rapidly gets into many of the issues that we're discussing today, and why it's so crucial that we get justices on the court who believe that the Constitution has a fixed meaning.
Well, we've had some developments really within just the last few hours. We've had Chuck Grassley, the senator, who is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has set up the hearing to hear both Dr. Ford, who's the accuser, and Judge Kavanaugh to refute or to defend himself, to have a hearing on Monday. Kavanaugh immediately agreed to it. Ford has not. And what has happened is that just today, Senator Grassley has said, okay, look, you've got until 10 o'clock on Friday to give us your brief and your bio. If not, you're not going to be able to attend. You're not going to be testifying. So yeah, it looks to really, me like he's really, intent.
Forgive me. I'm so sorry.
So it looks to me like he is intent, he being Senator Grassley, is intent on getting this issue behind him one way or the other and then getting a final vote on the judge.
Yeah, and forgive me. I did not mean to interrupt you.
That's
Chairman
okay.
Grassley has been the model of patience. And in fact, he has been such a model of patience that he actually canceled a vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee that was scheduled on the Kavanaugh nomination for Thursday. Now, as chairman, he did not, under the rules of the Senate, he did not have to cancel that hearing, nor at the 11th hour did he have to reschedule a Monday hearing and invite the accuser. But I think in his natural ability to want to be fair and to show the kind of gravitas that the American people have a right to expect from the chairman, he went ahead and said on Monday, on separate panels, we as the Senate Judiciary Committee will be open to hearing from the accuser, Dr. Ford, and from Judge Kavanaugh. I think people of goodwill say that is more than equitable, more than fair. And frankly, you know, this charge, this allegation is very serious. And so the Senate should want to hear from Judge Kavanaugh's accuser. But on the other hand, and this is very important, the Supreme Court begins its new term on Monday, October 1st. And in order to have a full complement of 9 justices for opening day, there are a certain number of days and hours that have to be allotted between the final vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee and the final vote on the Senate floor. And so Chairman Grassley is working very hard to accommodate both of these deadlines. And I think he has really done a very great job.
Over and above that, I agree with you. By the for what it's worth, I've actually I've interviewed Senator Grassley many times back when I was in Iowa, even when he was a congressman. I remember interacting with him at that time. He's a very impressive man. But the one thing that is coming up with this special hearing that I think is important, whether or not the Dr. Ford shows, is that Judge Kavanaugh has got to have an opportunity to defend himself. I'm seeing so much of this, always believe the accuser, always believe the woman. Excuse me, that's not what due process is about.
Yeah, may I say, believe that Judge Kavanaugh does deserve the opportunity to defend himself. And I must tell you, and I know you're a very close observer of the public square. It is very rare for allegations to be put forth in this manner at the and the timing and going to the heart of a person's character and integrity, and to have very rapidly the person being charged not only to categorically deny it, but to make it very clear that there is no part of this charge that is true, and that he was willing to go to the President of the United States and to the leadership of the Senate to say, I categorically stand by my statement. Ask me any question that you want to ask under oath. I mean, that is a that's more than just a kind of a denial. You know, a denial with a few caveats or what people would call wiggle room. When you read Judge Kavanaugh's denial, it's categorical. It has no wiggle room. And, you know, he's gone to the president, he's gone to the White House counsel, and he's gone to the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the ranking member of that committee and has told all of them that he is open to testifying under oath and that there's no truth in it whatsoever. And so this is my own, you know, sense that and faith and integrity in the system that justice will prevail here, and that that though it's difficult to have the delay, that if it's the right thing, and I believe it is, that Judge Kavanaugh will be confirmed as our next justice.
Well, he's looking to get a not just a not guilty verdict. He's looking to get an innocent verdict.
Absolutely, yes, indeed, and I do believe he is innocent. And I think it's also possible, you know, based on some of the reports that we've seen, that in fact this process will move forward and that he will be on the court by the early part of October. And I think that that's where the process is wending.
Well, I'm getting the impression that the Republican leadership, or at least under Senator Grassley, is really determined to get this done. You know, they're going to stand up and whoops, sorry about that. I forgot to turn off my timer. But I get the impression that the GOP leadership wants to get this done. They've drawn a line in the sand, so to speak, and say this is going to happen.
Yeah, I believe that they have shown a lot of magnanimity. I think they've shown a lot of grace and patience. I think it is possible that those who disagree under similar circumstances may not have shown the same grace and magnanimity. But the important thing is that Senator Grassley and the Majority Leader McConnell, they understand that the offices they hold are a public trust, and that no one is bigger than the office to which he's been elected, and that there is a particular protocol in a country that is often divided that really should be followed, and that when it is, the idea of truth and the idea of what is just can prevail. And in this instance, I believe that will be the case. And it's the sort of thing where it calls sometimes for superhuman patience and goodwill. But I believe that this is the grace as Christians that we are to show in our public lives. And I think it springs from the concept of justice. And I believe at this point that the right thing will happen.
And I'd also like to point out, you know, the Innocence Project for Northwestern University, and I believe there's another project that the University of Minnesota does, I think it's called the Exoneration Project, has shown repeatedly that many, many, many men who have been accused of sexual harassment and sex charges were not guilty. And we're certainly seeing it on college campuses today with the Title IX kangaroo courts that are going on. And it's frightening in a lot of ways. Tim, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you again for joining me on this program and putting your insight into it. You certainly see it up close in D.C., and I really appreciate your views and your wisdom on this.
Well, it's an honor to be invited. We will continue to pray that the right thing will prevail, and we'll continue to pray for our country.
Thank you, Tim. You've been listening to Free to Be Faithful, a presentation of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod as a religious liberty education awareness program. Free to Be Faithful is a program, and it's heard every third Monday of the month. And today's guest was Tim Gigline.
Missouri Synod. Thank you for listening and supporting Free to Be Faithful on World.